Making good. Land. That's the thing. Everything else drifts away. Shares, bonds, bits of paper, digital scoring of all kinds. Even houses go out of fashion, fall down. But land. The old guys understood that. The master, getting above himself. Callum Petrie was an outside kind of boy. After football practice, he'd head up to the Bray, rambled through the plantings, spruce and larch mostly, and fill his pockets with brambles and rub dock leaves on his shins for the nettle stings. He'd found a badger set and the corpses of birds killed by a hawk, and once the dried-up body of a sheep that had lost its way. The wool was as fluffy and fresh as if it were still alive. Mostly, he let his mind run far away to impossible places and forgotten stories. He was William Wallace, hiding from the English. He was a wounded clansman with the redcoats on his tail. He was a ridiculed inventor with flying tanks and jet-pack soldiers. Following the stories inside his head, he'd break into a run, slipping and panting along the old banks of earth on the edge of the forest until his legs ached, then diving behind roots and bushes. Callum was 14. Old enough, he realized, to know better. Sometimes he felt ashamed of his long jaunts, as his mother called them. But life without them would be impossible. Airless, headachy, drich. So his first reaction when he saw the tall, unfamiliar figure of his father climbing up the Bray, hunched against the wind with his hands in his pockets, was a feeling of shame. He shouldn't be wasting his time daydreaming up here. He should be doing something useful. Dad would want to know what was up. His second reaction was annoyance, for beside his father he could see the tall, gawky figure of his younger brother Fergus. Fergus was an inside kind of boy. He listened to his music. He had even given up football. He had no right to be here, led by Dad up to Callum's private domain. It was an intrusion. Davy spotted him standing by the side of the woods. His scarlet and black football strip stood out clearly.
"Hey, boy, out here for the birds?"
"No, Dad, I was just walking about."
"Well, there's peewits around. Golden plovers, too. And I swear I could hear some grouse back on the Bray."
Both of the boys thought Davy sounded different. Normally he didn't talk to them much. They got the idea they were in the way, and Mary didn't disabuse them. They were fond of their father, in a general abstract way. But, as Fergus put it, he never made an effort. He didn't know their friends or even which subjects they were doing for hires. To ferret Fergus out of his room and then drag him up here to find Callum was unheard of, and made both of them slightly uneasy.
"Sit down, lads. I've got some toffees in my pocket. Look out there. Grand view, isn't it?"
And it was. From the top of the Bray you couldn't see Glaycott at all. There were only undulating blue hills, darkly marked with woodland. The spidery remnants of a couple of Ayrshire's old pits closed since the strike could just be made out. But as the sunlight fell slowly on the bings, they seemed ancient and mysterious, not modern and mundane.
"Do you know your history, boys? Do they teach you in that school what a great land this is? Do you ken that Robbie Burns himself cut land over there, to the right, with his plough, before he daundered off to Edinburgh, leaving lasses in half the farmhouses for miles around greeting for him? I see that wee house peeking up beyond the kirk spire? It's not so wee at all."
That's where Jimmy Boswell, the greatest journalist of all, grew up, scared witless of his father. "Hey, lads, you've never been scared of me, I hope, have you?"
The answer was no. You couldn't be scared of a vacancy. Fergus sat motionless, his knees drawn up to his chin, wondering what the old guy was up to, with nothing to say. But Callum, found the words tumbling out.
"Aye, they taught us about Burns. The school took us to Mauchline. We learnt to a mouse. I haven't heard of the other fellow. But, Dart, this was William Wallace country, too. He was burning and killing all over, but only the English. And there were moss troopers."
Davy was impressed.
"You know a bit of your history, then, Callum? Is this your playground, then, this bit of wood?"
His son assented.
"So you know there's an old track coming round the other side of the hill, up through the woods?"
Callum pointed.
"It ends there, just on the other side of the gate."
"Well, see here. All this flat bit of ground, the grassy bit, beyond yon fence and the start of the heather? Well, boys, it's ours."
Callum was mildly offended.
"Da, it's mine, mostly. Fergus prefers indoors. I've been coming here for years."
Davy shook his head.
"No, I don't mean like that. I mean it really is ours. I've bought it."
Fergus raised his head.
"That's daft. Who'd want a useless bit of lumpy grass? Just the sheep."
"It's not useless, Fergus. Come on, you've just been admiring the view. Imagine looking out at this every evening with the rustle of the woods and the deer and the birds at your back."
Callum couldn't keep a quaver out of his voice.
"You mean you're going to build a house up here? Where it's all quiet and wild and unspoiled? There's going to be cement mixers and lorries and pipes and all that?"
Davy felt a little disappointed by Callum's reaction, but also quietly impressed. Once he'd have been angry. No longer. Mostly what he felt these days was tired. He didn't feel guilty, particularly. Ella had been a bad, bad woman, and she would have come to a bad, bad end sooner or later. When he'd had power, he'd done some good things. Good man, bad man. The strength of politics, the master had once said, was that it got bad people, ambitious people, angry people, damaged people, doing good things. Davy hadn't understood that at the time. He wasn't sure he did now. But what he did know was that the best rules were the simple, old ones. You look after the ones you love. The first thing he'd done when he came back to the town was to go and see Granny Starling. Bunty was with her. The old lady had surprised him by saying she agreed with his decision to stand down from Parliament.
"You're a builder. The family were a builders. You know enough of a snake for that place down there."
"Mind, we still need our own folk to keep their eyes peeled for us."
It was clear who she meant. Over the next few weeks, Davy would put his shoulder to the wheel of Bunty's campaign. He thought she'd probably win, actually, but she was up against a powerful opponent. Tony Moretti had never bothered with the Labour Party. He'd moved directly from the Scottish Socialists to the SNP. He badgered Davy to go for a drink with him, and although he had no intention of deflecting himself, Davy went along out of curiosity. Moretti had grown heavier and seemed more substantial. He was perfectly friendly, but he hadn't lost an ounce of his radicalism.
"See here, Mr. Petrie, it's all very simple. We are going to build a better, fairer Scotland. I don't need to tell you about the corruption of the Westminster elite. You've been there, done it, been in it yourself, and had a good sense to get out again."
Davy had replied with the best arguments he had. The sheer impossibility of a small country like Scotland standing up to the great forces of international business. The failure of solidarity if working-class Scots turn their backs on their brothers and sisters across the north of England. The decades when the SNP were little more than tartan Tories. But Moretti just smiled, slightly patronisingly. Moretti or Bunty? It would certainly be a fascinating fight. There was one final thing to do. With the familiar scent of coal smoke in his nostrils, One evening, Davy walked down the hill towards the railway track in the direction of Walter Smedley's house. If he found it, he thought, he'd probably kneel in the dirt in front of it and ask for forgiveness. This, after all, was his original sin. But after half an hour of searching, he realized that the Smedley bungalow must have long disappeared. There was a new housing estate covering what had been the southern edge of the town, and built by his firm, too. If the boys weren't ready, he decided, then he was in no hurry.
"You know me, lads. I need a project. I'm not staying down south anymore. Your mother needs me here. Maybe one day you'll think you do, too.
No pressure, mind.
Let's go down the Bray and see her, shall we?"
And Davy reached out a hand to Fergus and hoiked him up. Callum walked down the hill beside them, and just as they reached the hedge that led to the playing fields, he leaned in to Davy. So his father's hand rested on his head.